Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be talking about originally came out on October 1st, 2008. This was actually the smallest week I've had since middle of July, and prior to that, early April or whatever. I only had 29 comics and 2 trades this week. So nice small week that gives me a chance to get a little further caught up on my reading. I'm still massively behind. I've got, I think, 103 comics in my to-read pile. I am so far behind, I now have 2 issues of Savage Dragon in my to-read pile.
Oh, wow. That's not easy to do.
Could be worse. Could be 2 issues of All-Star Batman and Robin the Boy Wonder.
True.
But the minute it can't get any worse is if I ever get 2 issues of Ultimate Hulk versus Wolverine. But let's face it, they're not going to do another issue of that ever, so it's a moot point. So I just need to catch up. It's too much stuff. How about you? How big was it for you?
28 comics, but I got 6 collected editions this week.
Mm-hmm.
The Savage Sword of Conan Volume 4 came out, Ultimate Iron Man Volume 2, The Dark Tower Long Road Home, Dick Tracy Volume 5, The Spirit Volume 2, and this is the Darwin Cook Spirit,
mm-hmm.
not the reprints of the Will Eisner stuff. And then a graphic novel called Broken Girls, which I don't remember exactly why I ordered it, but I did.
I got that one too, and I was kind of in the same thing. What was this about or whatever, you know?
Something must have been compelling about the solicit for it.
I think it was a sorority girls fight back against a serial killer kind of a thing, maybe. It seemed like a twist on that kind of a movie.
I flipped through it, and it didn't look that good.
Well, it had to be a damn good solicitation, because that's not even the kind of movie I usually go see, but I picked up that trade.
Yeah. And then I got the Huntress bust came out, the Terry Dodson one from the Women of the DC Universe line, and I got one of those graphic audios, Superman The Neverending Battle came out.
Oh, cool.
So, a very light week for comics, but I got, you know, a decent amount of other stuff this week, which I hadn't been getting a lot of that for the last few weeks, so it was interesting that it all hit in 1 week.
Well, you had 1 week where you didn't get anything but comics, and that was highly unusual for you.
Yeah, it was weird because I got this little tiny box from DCVS. What is this little box? This looks like a box I get from Amazon or something.
Yeah. Well, the other trade I got was Countdown to Final Crisis Volume 3. But, I mean, that's where our buying habits really differ. I think I'm getting a lot more comics than you are, but virtually, you know, nothing compared to you on the high-ticket items. Whereas you get, you know, a little bit less in terms of comics, but just blow me out of the water on the number of hardcovers, busts, and stuff like that that you get.
In correction department, we did get a email from listener Randy Zingaro when we talked about Project Superpowers last week, pointing out that the Project Superpowers characters are from the 40s, not the 50s. Which is very interesting. And he did point out that the Devil character, Daredevil, was an extremely popular character until almost the end of the war. And I think I knew that in the back of my head, that that character was really popular. Although, I'll still kind of stand by, I don't know why he completely faded from view for 40 years. You know, there must have been something going on there, because nobody picked up that character and did anything with it for a really long period of time, but it was very interesting that we had that. And then he has some other ideas here in his email about, since he had been out of collecting for a long time, talking a little bit about collecting in the new millennia, I guess I'll compare to, you know, in the past. And I think we'll maybe do a roundtable about that at some point.
Yeah, that could be good, just to do a discussion on if you're getting back into comics, what to look at, what to check out and stuff. That could be good.
Yeah.
So, but it at least explains why the Daredevil character, or the death-defying devil he's going by now, is getting used in some of these, you know, revival-type stories. You know. So, cool. That's great information. It'd be nice if some of these publishers that were using the public domain characters had something in the text page of the first few issues explaining, hey, this is the history of the character.
Right.
You know, whatever the story is. Just a lot of us are not old enough to have been around in the 40s or be familiar enough with some of the stuff that goes that far back that's not the the still popular titles. So
right.
Good information to have. Cool.
Oh, and Lynn Workman sent me a little press release from Dark Horse Comics where they're setting up a thing with the Portland State University to have a complete library of all Dark Horse comics preserved at the Portland State University Library as a special collection, which is very interesting.
Yeah, they not only gave them a complete run of everything they have published, but are going to be continuing to send them stuff as it comes out, which I think is a really smart move for them to do, and just a cool thing for the university.
And they'll be having a kickoff for that this Thursday, October 16th at 7 p.m. at the Portland State University. So any listener who's up in Portland that is interested in that can probably find out more at the Dark Horse website. And if they want to roll by the university for the ceremony, that is this Thursday. So as this airs, it'll be in just a couple of days.
And if anyone does do that, please come to our forum and let us know what you thought of it and how it went.
Yep. Any other news items?
Not that I can think of.
Okay. I'm going to get into our books for the week. We got Vixen, Return of the Lion, issue number 1 by G. Willow Wilson, with art by someone who I had never heard of before, Cafu, single name, or Santiago, it's Cafu, Santiago Arcas is the colorist. What do you think?
I had kind of mixed feelings on this. The first thing is, I think this came out a little early, not in terms of when it was scheduled to come out. It came out on time, but this story I don't think should have come out until the current storyline going on in JLA finishes, because this seems to clearly happen afterwards based on, you know, the, Vixen having her powers back, and that's kind of a whole what's going on with that over in Justice League. So that, timing-wise, irked me just a little bit. You know, it's like, can't you wait for that one storyline to finish? Puts this off a few months. What's the big deal? And on her powers, when did they include shapeshifting to take on the attributes of the animals? And there are a couple of places where her hands are changing into, like, claws or talons and stuff like that. And I'm not going to say that I've read every appearance of Vixen, because I'm not certain that I have, but I suspect that I certainly have, because I know I've gotten from her first appearance forward.
Maybe that happens in the conclusion of the current storyline, so.
Maybe it does. Or maybe it's just this artist's take on it. It's not a big deal either way, but that kind of inconsistency kind of doesn't sit well with me at times. And overall, I really like the story. I really liked the art. One thing I noticed about the art, beyond just the way her powers were manifesting, was the use of black lines, particularly on the interior of figures. If you go to page 6, Superman's telling Vixen about what happened to her mother, okay? And there's a really nice shot of Superman, you know, with the file and stuff. And if you look at the S emblem, it's got the blue for the suit, the red for the S, the yellow for the interior part of it, no black lines whatsoever. And this, in and of itself, gives the art a little bit of a different feel that I think a lot of people, unless they're looking for it, may not even kind of notice. But of course, once you point it out and say, oh, well, it's obvious, of course it is, it's been pointed out, it's kind of a nice touch. And again, it's good standard comic book art, but because of that, sets it just a little bit apart. And it worked, whereas I've seen other cases where they try to do that and it doesn't quite work. I'm not real crazy about the fact that Vixen is basically setting out to kill the person who killed her mother. I prefer my Justice Leaguers not, you know, doing premeditated homicide or going out after that. I'm even less crazy about other Justice Leaguers like, oh, say, Superman, pretty much letting her go and do that. So there are a couple of things where the nature of the story they're trying to tell, I think, kind of undercuts the heroic nature of the character. But, you know, if you can get past that aspect of, okay, she's going out for revenge, I thought it was a good story. I thought it was really good art, and it really kind of exceeded my expectations, because after things like the Raven miniseries, I was afraid this was just going to be another, okay, let's kick 5 issues of something out the door to get 5 issues worth of sales on, and it might be, you know, not so good. So I was pleased with this. I didn't think it was the best thing I've ever read, but it certainly met my expectations, and I was happy with it.
So what kind of rating would you give it?
I'm going to say probably a 4. Again, wasn't perfect, but I was happy enough with the art, the flow of the story, and I think it was certainly much better than it had probably any right to be. What did you think of it?
I gave it a 4 also, but I'll give it a much more positive spin. I mean, it wasn't the greatest comic book I ever read, but I didn't have major issues with anything like you did on motivation, or, you know, I just kind of let the hand thing slide, you know, with the claws. And I think for me, I really was impressed with the art. This was a first issue challenge book for me, and I liked it well enough that I shot my note in to add the rest of the miniseries to my pull list. So I will continue to buy this and get the other issues of this series. I was extremely impressed with the art because, again, I mean, the Raven miniseries is a good example. DC, as well as other publishers, have been trucking out these artists that you've never heard of before, and you see their work, and I don't know what you think, but I think to myself, boy, this artist has no business drawing a mainstream Marvel or DC comic book. They are certainly not ready for prime time. They should go and get a couple of hundred pages out of their system on some indie book somewhere before, you know, you put them on some high profile book. And I thought this artist was standing shoulder to shoulder with some really above average art, you know, among some of the nicer art that I've seen in anything. And it was a little, as you say, and it didn't process with me at the absence of the internal black lines in many places, but it was something that had a nice texture to it. It's kind of like almost halfway between a painted style of like a Daniel Acuna, who we're going to see on the next book, and standard comic book line art, but it had a very nice feel to it, and I was really happy with it. So the art style itself was a real big seller. And the story, you know, I will agree with you that, you know, it's not generally good to go out on the path of vengeance like that and want to kill somebody. However, I think that sometimes, maybe I'm just a little morally ambiguous on this one, the guy she's going to try to kill, like, is a genocidal maniac who, like, killed her parents and stuff like this. And it's like, to some extent, when you get an individual like that, if you don't put them down like a mad dog, they're just going to keep on doing it, you know?
Oh, I'm not arguing that the guy, you know, whether he deserves to die or not. Certainly, you know, it totally understandable for that. He's done bad things. He should be punished. A death is not out of the question on that. But again, it's one thing for Vixen to want revenge. I'm surprised by that, but not horrified by that. But for then the Justice League and Superman in particular to let her go after that was a bit surprising. Now, if they had done that same scene with Superman saying, here's what happened to your mother, but had Batman do it instead, then when she says, hey, I've got to go take care of this, it would have been much more understandable for Batman to say, you've got to do what you've got to do. It wasn't something that ruined the story for me, but it was something that it's like, is that really the right take to go? You know.
Good point. Batman would have been a better character in that particular
that scene, yeah.
Yeah, that scene. He would have worked for the reasons that you say. But in general, I liked the story. It was really good. G. Willow Wilson, I liked her story on Air that we reviewed a couple of weeks ago. This is nice. So she's on my list now of, you know, hey, people to keep an eye out for. And the same thing with Kafu. Like I said, above average art. I really enjoyed reading through the art in this, and I look forward to seeing the rest of the series.
I agree with you on both of that. While I had a few issues with the motivation for one or two of the characters, overall, the writing was incredibly solid, very enjoyable, and very, you know, it flowed naturally, it felt logical. Yeah, as much as I really liked the writing, I've got to agree entirely with you that the art here was I mean, I would be very happy with this art on Justice League, Justice Society, Titans, Teen Titans, you know, on a mainstream DC or Marvel book. This is very good art. Certainly, if this artist does other work, I'm going to be interested in checking it out. And if this artist has done previous work, I'd like to know that so I can go check that out if I don't already have it. You know, they picked the right creative team for this book.
Okay, next we've got The Eternals, number 5, by Charles and Daniel Nauf, with art by Daniel Acuna. This book was on my drop list. Number 5 was my last issue of The Eternals. It had been meandering for quite some time. I hadn't been feeling anything in particular was happening in the story. And this issue, stuff happened. And enough stuff happened that I want to see what happens next. So it has gotten a reprieve. It has come off my drop list and is back in pull list territory.
Is it off your drop list for the duration of this story arc, or off the drop list until it gets back on for some other reason?
It's back on my drop list until it irritates me again.
Oh, fair enough, fair enough.
I'll say that. It's you know, things started happening, and I'm going to assume that they're going to continue happening. I was happy with you know, that you finally dropped the other shoe on Thena's kid, and the Makari Ajak tension, and you know, I want to see what happens with Fastos, and I really do like Daniel Acuna's art. I mean, I liked it when he was doing the Freedom Fighters stuff, Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters over at DC. He's doing a nice job here. This is sort of a self-contained little corner of the Marvel Universe going on in this book.
Yeah, it's one of those where this title is, for me, also on that, you know, I'm thinking about dropping it. And I'm not sure off the top of my head how many issues I have on order. I may have one or two more. Enough happened here that it kind of got a little bit of a reprieve for me, too. Certainly, I don't want this to be the last issue I get. I want to find out what happens at least in the next issue. But, you know, maybe at the start of the next story arc, I could drop. You know, it's one of those that if I have to make cuts, I could probably cut this one fairly easily without missing it. But I'm also not feeling the need of, oh, geez, I've got to cut it.
Well, I think that's also because this is a double-edged sword for a book that sets itself up as sort of a self-contained part of the Marvel Universe, at least for me. Because the reason that I read Marvel books and DC books in the DC Universe is because of the shared universe concept. And because they kind of intertwine with one another and there is a larger story being told. Now, when you sort of set yourself apart from that, it makes it enjoyable on one hand, but on the other hand, it makes it easier to drop because I'm going to get something that's totally apart from the Marvel Universe. There's plenty of unique creative visions out there that I can pick up from different creators. Now, on Eternals, you know, so you got this giant celestial standing in San Francisco. There's a little bit of continuity issue there with what side of the Golden Gate Bridge he happens to be standing on, I think, because I thought I'd seen him in other books, like some of the X books, standing in a city park, whereas in this book they showed him standing on the North Bay side of the bridge across the bay, which I thought he was standing actually over in San Francisco, is where he's standing in on the second, third to the last page there.
Yeah, yeah.
That particular area, I mean, it's an actual reasonably decent drawing of San Francisco and its environment, but that is a barren hill across the Bay Bridge that, you know, you're not going to have people hanging around. There's no park there, and they have clearly established in other books that he's standing in some city park where there's, like, hippies dancing around by his feet and all this kind of stuff, and where he's depicted here is not that. Little bit of a thing going on there. But, you know, these little minor continuity glitches work in all the time. This is just the general editorial problem that I've got. I mean, do we just have editors who have relatively weak mental facilities? I mean, it's just, I read these books relatively casually, some of them, like Eternals. I'm certainly not like studying every panel of it and hanging month to month on, you know, what happens with the Eternal storyline. It's a good story, but, you know, it's not my job, right?
Yeah.
If I'm the editor of the book, maybe I would notice a continuity glitch like that and have it fixed. You know, it's just...
Well, I think it all comes down to, you know, not necessarily the mental facilities of the person, but the nature of those. Because there's some people where that stuff just jumps out. There are some that it really does not. And I got to wonder if the editors these days, particularly at Marvel and DC, you know, given the number of titles they're coming out with, if they're just being overworked and don't have the time to devote to this that they really need to.
Well, maybe it gets back down to people being hired for jobs that they have a natural aptitude for. And if you're not detail-oriented, then maybe you shouldn't be an editor.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I can see that.
You know, it's just, it seems like that's the kind of thing that falls into the job description of being an editor. But maybe I'm just being a jerk about it or something.
Well, I mean, certainly there are a lot of things that an editor needs to do. Maintaining the continuity and consistency of the title, making sure that it's professionally put together and comes out on time. Those are different skill sets. And hey, maybe you've got an editor that's not the greatest speller in the world or whatever. Fine. Delegate that task to somebody who is. If you're not somebody who can do, you know, catch all the little continuity glitches here and there, delegate that to someone who can. The more eyes who are on this book before it comes out, or any book before it comes out, the better off it'll be. You know, you can put processes in place to shore up any shortcomings any individual person might have. So, it was one of those things I hadn't noticed the gaffe with where the Celestial was at all. But I will totally admit that I am doing a fairly casual reading of this book. So, it's as much I don't care where he's standing as I didn't notice where he was standing. But that, to me, is part of the problem with this book, is I don't have any huge attachment to the Eternals. This book isn't giving me any huge attachment to the Eternals. I'm not hating the book. I'm not loving the book. It's just another comic I'm reading. And because it's reasonably self-contained, it's got to stand or fall on its own merits. It's not getting any advantage of any other title I may be loving. So, you know, that's where it stands for me.
So what rating does that put it in?
For me, that puts it in a 3. There was nothing that was so wrong about it that made me think, ooh, it had to get a 2, although I considered a 2. It's good. It was good enough that I want to read the next issue of this, but not good enough that it's a book that I'm certainly going to keep getting regardless. You know what I mean? It's still on an issue-by-issue basis to a degree.
I guess I gave it a 4, and if I had given it a 3, I wouldn't have picked up the next issue, because once it's on my drop list, something above average has to come out about the book to save it, and I liked this issue. I mean, I'm nitpicking about the Celestial, I'll admit, but, you know, that's just more of a general statement about, editorial skill at Marvel and DC lately, and not just Marvel and DC. We'll find out when we talk about Zombies of Mass Destruction, and I am surprised that there even was an editor on that book. But, you know, this is the kind of thing that the story itself, I thought, was really pretty good. And I'm enjoying it. And I, like I said, the art to me, it's really, really different than other art that I see, and I like it. So it's one of these personal subjective things. But the art by Daniel Acuna kind of just, I enjoy looking at it. So, you know, it's a good book.
And I can understand that preference for the art. I mean, for me, that was something that really worked in favor of Vixen, is if it had been a lesser artist and one that I didn't care for, I probably would have been much, much harsher on that book. Whereas I really enjoyed reading that book as much for the art as the story. Whereas, you know, with Eternals, it's good art. There are a couple of places where it was a little dark. It's not a style that particularly clicks with me, and that's part of what puts me at a little bit of a distance with the story.
Yeah, this is the thing where, if you look at it, this is, you know, comics being a visual medium. When you have a story that's a good story, but it's got art that strikes the reader, in this case me, mm-hmm. or you know, or you, But if you have art in that comic that really goes above and above and beyond above and beyond, as I am tongue-tied, above and beyond the Call of Duty, where it really strikes you a certain way that it just kind of makes you happy to be looking at it because it's really nice art, that's going to elevate the book up and knock it up a notch, at least by my assessment. Mm-hmm. Whereas if the art was kind of like, eh, you know, it's like it's okay art. Or in the other case, you know, that'll just kind of like leave it where the story is going to put it, you know. Or in the other case where it's like the art has so many issues with it that you're kind of like, wow, that artist really needs to, you know, work on their skills, you know, kind of thing. And there, that's where it's going to knock it down a notch for me. Same kind of thing, but maybe to a little lesser extent on the story side. And if you have really beautiful art, you know, like Alex Ross draws a book and it's got like a really weak story. Same kind of thing. I mean, it's going to knock it down a notch, you know, but it's, I'm more likely to buy, you know, every issue of an Alex Ross comic, even if it's got art that I'm, I mean, even if it's got a story that I'm not that thrilled with, than I am to, you know, get a great story that's, you know, drawn by an artist that doesn't click with me, you know, as a good case in point, Runaways.
Yeah, it comes down to that the art is between you and the story. The story is not between you and the art.
Right.
So you've got to kind of get through the art, and either that's a pleasurable experience or it's not, to get to the story. And if the art is somehow getting in the way of you and getting to the story, that's going to hurt the story.
Yeah, and that's a completely personal preference mm-hmm. thing. You know,
totally.
Runaways, I like Terry Moore's story, but Humberto Ramos just doesn't work for me on that book. So I got the first issue, and I don't feel the need to get any issues beyond number one.
Well, and you mentioned for that book, because not only is it a subjective thing, it's subjective in case by case. There are certain artists that are perfect fits for certain books that I would not want to see them on other books because they're wrong for those books.
Right.
And doing that match of the artist for the material is sometimes tricky, although it's usually incredibly obvious when it goes horribly, horribly wrong.
Move into Zombies of Mass Destruction, number 2.
Yeah.
We got the script by Kevin Grievous, or Grivo. Looked on his website, doesn't have a pronunciation for his French-looking name, so I'll pronounce it how I please. Pencils by Geraldo Borges, with inks by a cast of thousands, Jimmy Reyes, Nick Schley, and Michael Bibinski. The vast art team kind of showed on this book, I thought.
This is a title that I picked up based on the strength of Red 5's output on everything else. I'm not a zombie fan, and this is one of, I think, 3 zombie titles I've ever gotten, the other two being Walking Dead and Marvel Zombies. I don't think I've got a single other zombie title in my collection of 40,000 plus comics. I liked the first issue of this. I liked the second issue of this, but I felt this could have been the first issue just as easily as the first issue was. So far, for both, it's all set up, no payoff. And, you know, for a 6-issue miniseries, the pacing has got me a little worried at this point.
Well, it's interesting what you just said, because this is the first time I can recall reading a second issue with first issue syndrome.
We had that a little with Hiding in Time, I think it was.
Maybe. But, I mean, I'm reading this thing, and the same thing. It's like, nothing happens, you know? It like goes along, and it's like the same thing on the first issue. You had a whole bunch of stuff happen, and the zombies popped out of the tubes in the last couple of pages and didn't do a whole lot. And here you got, like, the whole issue goes by, and you see the zombie on the very last page and, you know, doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
This really changed me. I was like, I used to like, oh, Red 5, I've loved everything that they've put out. Well, it's like, okay, that streak ends with Zombies of Mass Destruction for me. The other Red 5 books, I got a feeling that there was a creative team with a story to tell. You look at Atomic Robo, you look at Abyss, you look at Neozoic, Midnight, any of these books. This one, well, Kevin has a story to tell, but with this art team that's going on this book, it's like, well, who can we get to draw Kevin's story? You know,
yeah,
it's just, you got a bunch of dudes drawing it. The art is really inconsistent. The art is weak, in my opinion. So we were just talking about how the art can, I mean, this is the kind of thing where the art's going to knock the book down a level. You got this main character, Drake, who he's in that initial scene in Kuwait. Those guys all look generic enough that, you know, I have a hard time picking him out and recognizing him, you know, from the later scenes with him.
Yeah.
We have editorial issues. You know, you go to...
That, to me, is what really knocked the book down.
Okay, so let's just start. Wheaton, Maryland, 2009, okay, when he falls out of the bed, when he's on the floor, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got the scene going along, and you're reading it for several pages. You get a page now that says minutes later. Okay, you're in this command bunker and wherever this is, the Pentagon or whatever, like this. Okay, you know, like this, that's the page before the staple.
Yeah.
More continuous scene. And okay, so it was Wheaton, Maryland, 2009. Then you have minutes later.
Oh, you know, oh yeah, okay.
And then it's Wheaton, Maryland, 2008. What?
Well, what happened, and I just realized this now, is the dialogue for that page where we get the second Wheaton, Maryland, not the caption, but the dialogues, should have been on that first page, because the no would go in the inset, the I thought I'd be used to it by now would go where he is. So we're missing the dialogue on that first page. The dialogue we have on that page after the staple is, of course, from that page, and we don't have any of the dialogue that should have been on that page.
Yeah, and... you know, what about the big gap?
Oh, gosh. On the page or two after, yeah.
Insert name of Middle Eastern city here.
Or looking for a Middle East city. It's like, wow.
This book was so badly edited. Whoever, you know, it's like, I don't even want to embarrass the guy who's the editor for this thing. But, oh, my Lord. This book was just cobbled together.
Well, in fairness to the editor, it's entirely possible that this is not an editorial problem but a production mistake, and they used the wrong files, and they have the correct file sitting around somewhere. In either case, it got to where they saw the proof copy didn't catch this, and it saw print this way. So it does rest on the editorial's shoulder regardless, but he may not have been the source of the error.
Yeah, but, you know, my Lord.
Yeah.
This is, you know... There's issues with this. Story has got issues. The art has got issues. 2 out of 5. Certainly not the worst. It's not the worst thing I've ever read, but it's below average.
I would say it's certainly the worst issue Red 5 has done.
Yeah.
And I give that solely on the horrible mistakes on the dialogue, the not fixing the script before it saw print. I mean, particularly the looking for Middle East City. That had to go through not only the writer, the editor, the letterist, whoever put the files together. It's like, wow, this went through multiple sets of eyes and saw print this way. And Red 5 has shown they could do much better than this. I am sure that a number of things went horribly, horribly wrong to lead up to this, but the result is this is the issue I got, you know?
And you know what? It's almost like this is just, you know, it's by Red 5 and Darkstorm, okay? And you've got the editor as the editor for Darkstorm. And I have the feeling that what Red 5 is doing here is they are publishing a book that is being handed to them.
And that's fine and good, but they should at least put eyes on it and catch this kind of mistake. I wouldn't expect them to cover the this is a second first issue kind of a thing. But that's story, you know?
But I'm just saying it's like I give Red 5 the benefit of the doubt that this is something that they are publishing from someone else. And in my mind, they should stick to publishing their own stuff that they've got their own control over, because there is an absolute difference in quality that I as a reader have experienced from the other Red 5 books and this one.
At the very least, I would put the logo of, say, Darkstorm or whoever on the cover to where people have a chance of knowing before they read the thing. Because I agree, this is markedly different than what they've done before, and it certainly reeks of not having had a final read-through at a couple of key stages, you know. I'm curious what's going to happen with the other couple of issues, and certainly I hope this kind of mistake doesn't happen again. The story is still interesting to me. The fact that so far we've had essentially 2 prologues and still waiting to get to the action is disappointing.
yeah, the pacing is all off for a monthly book. You know, and like I said, I mean, you get first issue syndrome in books. Usually it lasts for the first issue and then they, you know, get to the point. The last time it dragged on for a number of issues that I recall was Charlie Houston's Moon Knight, and I dropped that book. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. That's one of the few Marvel titles I've dropped at some point. I'm getting a couple issues now, but wow, that one was harsh.
So you a 2 on this one also?
Yep.
This one, the art and the story worked together to both be below average.
I didn't have major problems with the art. I'm not going to say it was great art. It was not. But there was nothing that got so in my face, so annoying that I'm thinking, wow, this guy sucks. It was pedestrian art.
Go to the page with the staples.
Okay.
The left page, the middle, third, second from the bottom. Look at the guy's hands.
Okay.
Do those look like hands to you? It's like, look like a paper cutout some kid would do to make a turkey out of or something, especially that right hand.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not great art, but I can tell what's going on, and it's not like the Raven stuff where it's so cartoony, it's ambiguous and stuff like that. This is I agree, it's reasonably weak art in a couple of places. It's acceptable art in enough of the places. You know, you look at the right page where you see the close-up of the guy on panels 3 and 4. That's decent art. Is it brilliant art? No.
You know, and since there's like 3 inkers, it's very possible that it's just like there's one inker that's just weak. I don't understand why they farmed this out to 3 different inkers.
The impression I get out of it having 3 different inkers is they got the pages laid enough from the penciler that it had to be kind of, you know, paralleled across 3 guys to get it in time. But that's total guesswork.
Yeah, this is the case where I was not waiting on the edge of my seat for Zombies of Mass Destruction number 2, that if it would have come out 2 weeks late, I would have, you know, with better art, you know, it's like I would have been okay with that.
I wouldn't have even noticed it had been late. Better art would have helped, no question about that. But to me, the editorial mistakes in terms of the wrong dialogue on the wrong pages, the incomplete dialogue, that was a delay this and get that fixed kind of issue with no exceptions. Those mistakes are unacceptable. The thing I would fix even before the art was the fact this felt too much like a second first issue. After those things, then I would address getting, you know, the art cleaned up. In other words, I didn't think the art was getting in the way of the story for me, but once I got to the story, I found it a little wanting.
You know, and I guess I'm holding this to a different standard, because when I read a non-Marvel DC book, I want to see a creative team that cares about the book and is bringing me their vision of what this book should be. If I want to see work for hire artists, I'll go read the lower tier books at Marvel and DC.
Yeah, I can see that. That's a fair point. This reeks of work for hire.
This is not, you know, somebody sharing his vision with Kevin to bring this story to the reader. It does not feel like that to me.
Well, and it also doesn't reek of the writer having gotten the art team so engrossed and involved in the story that they feel a key component of it. And certainly the letterer doesn't feel enough to have ownership to make sure that the mistakes in the looking...
Well, I'm sure they're doing that on a computer.
Well, but fine, they're doing it on the computer, but the guy who typed in the looking for name of city should have had enough attachment to the project to make sure that, hey, did that get fixed before it saw print?
Cut and paste, John. Cut and paste out of electronic files. You know, that's one thing you lose when you don't have hand lettering, right? When, you know, someone's doing cut and paste here.
They've still got to read the script, I would hope.
Not necessarily.
They don't have to. I see your point there. I see where you're coming from. But to me, that shows a sign of such detachment from the project and such a lack of ownership on the project for the letterer. I mean, it's understandable how that can happen, I guess is what I'm saying. But the fact that it did happen and the guy didn't have enough to say, hey, did this ever get fixed and make sure it did, is problematic.
There is that. Had I been lettering this, I'm not a letterer, but, you know, it's like, got this thing called the internet. You're doing computer lettering. I would have, like, looked up a Middle East city and stuck it. How about this one?
That's actually, yeah, that's what should have happened. It should have never even seen been in the file that way. Yeah.
How hard is it?
But again, lack of ownership on the project. You know, it was the writer's project, not the letterer's. The letterer obviously didn't feel involved enough or empowered enough to do those sorts of things. That's unfortunate, you know. And you're right, for independent books, you want, and certainly to a large degree I want as well, books that are done by passionate creators on the entire team, not people who are simply hired to letter a book or color a book or ink a book or pencil a book. You know, there are going to come times when that happens, whatever, but you want those people involved enough and passionate enough about the project to at least do, frankly, a more professional job than this comic turned out to be. You know, and again, I know that based on the other output from Red 5, Red 5 is capable of much, much better than this. It does reek, like you were saying, of they're essentially taking a file from somebody else and handing it to the printer and not doing much in between. And that's to the detriment of the Red 5 comics brand. Anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it. Join us next week when we discuss Green Lantern number 35 from DC, Avengers Invaders number 5 from Marvel, and 13 Chambers number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.